Episode 123.
I have a difficulty taking orders from people that I don't think are smarter than I am, and that's always just been an issue for me. I realized early on that it was something that could either be a very negative thing in my life or something I could turn into a positive thing. By becoming self-employed, I had to answer to myself and had to be accountable to myself and my customers. And being accountable to customers is very different for me than being accountable to a boss. And it made a big impact on me and made it give me an opportunity to be successful in life.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriato here, and thanks for listening to Remarkable Results Radio. And welcome to episode 123 with Pete Rudloff. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Search for parts, get the latest technical updates, and sign up for their new Garage Rewards loyalty program at their all-new website, fmmotorparts.com. Hey, do you know where you can find the podcast when you're mobile? Of course, from my website on your smartphone or tablet, but also on Apple iTunes, Google Music Play, and Stitcher Radio. And hey, if you're over on iTunes and enjoy the twice-weekly doses of information and wisdom, I would appreciate giving me a rating and review. Now, Pete Rudloff, owner of Pete's Garage in Newark, Delaware. Now, Pete is considered a fix-it shop among his peers in the industry. Over 40 local shops take their diagnostics trouble to Pete to solve. This episode is jammed with important Pete wisdom, and among those topics, how Pete started the Delaware Training Group, his popular Show Me the Fix articles for Auto Inc. magazine, how his OE scan tool project grew into a very important industry tool in concert with ASA and the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers, his current work on creating mandatory minimum standards to create technician licensing in the state of Delaware, and the reasons the aftermarket needs to be proactive with this inevitable regulation versus bureaucratic intervention, and a very exciting technician apprentice outline for any shop to implement. Enjoy Pete Rudloff's story, a person who knows what he wants, when he wants it, and who tells of a personal life-changing story that made his support of March of Dimes so important to him. Now, I promise, buckle up, and here we go. Nice to be with Pete Rudloff from Pete's Garage in Newark, Delaware. Hey, Pete.
Hey, Carm.
You ready to share your remarkable results?
Let's do it.
Hey, man. So how did you get into the trade? I mean, people just don't all of a sudden grow up and say, I want to be a mechanic, do they?
So complete dumb luck on my part. I graduated high school and needed a job. My college plans didn't work out the way I'd originally anticipated. And a local shop that was a machine shop was hiring, and they brought me on board to disassemble cylinder heads. And after being there for a couple of months, they realized that I had mechanical aptitude, and they moved me into their garage portion, fixing cars.
Got it. But what else did you want to be in life?
So my original intention was law enforcement. I had, from a very young age, I had planned on becoming a police officer and serving the community in that fashion.
Do you regret it?
You know, I'm not really a regret guy. So there's times I look back and I go, boy, it would have been a little different. I have a lot of friends that are law enforcement, and you know, they have their own degree of difficulties that they have to deal with in their job and their own degree of job satisfaction. I took the approach of I'm going to make a good run with auto repair. After I got in auto repair for a short period of time, I realized that it was a good and valuable trade. It was a trade that I could make a good living at, a good honest living at.
Yeah, yeah.
And that I could do some good for the community. I mean, everybody's got cars. Everybody needs their cars to run reliably on the road. And so I got hooked on cars.
Okay, hooked on cars. How'd you get hooked on being a business owner?
So the short story is that I'm not employable. I'm a little bit of a fight authority kind of guy.
Really?
Yeah, no surprise there, right?
By the end of the interview, our listener's going to understand why.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I know.
So I have a difficulty taking orders from people that I don't think are smarter than I am.
Okay.
And that's always just been an issue for me. I realized early on that it was something that could either be a very negative thing in my life or something I could turn into a positive thing. By becoming self-employed, I had to answer to myself and had to be accountable to myself and my customers. And being accountable to customers is very different for me than being accountable to a boss. And it made a big impact on me and made it give me an opportunity to be successful in life.
Thank God entrepreneurialism exists.
Right?
Some of us guys that are, you know, the square peg in the round hole wouldn't know what to do.
I'm just not employable. That's what it comes down to. I figured it out young, so I'm fortunate in that regard.
So you're known as the Fix-It Shop in Delaware. How'd you earn that reputation?
Early on, it started off just being so hard-headed that I wouldn't say no. And we would take on any job regardless of what it was, and we would find a way to get through it somehow. In my earlier years, we weren't as well-tooled, we weren't as well-trained, and the information systems weren't as available as they are today. So we just kind of gutted stuff out, and we would take on the really hard jobs that nobody else wanted and gut it out. And over time, I started learning more and more about cars, how they work, how they function, what tools would make my job more efficient, what information would make our job more efficient, what training I needed to get stuff done. And I also learned how to say no. I learned how to say, all right, we're not trained on something, so we're not going to work on that. But whatever we do bring in the door, we're going to be fully expert on. So we no longer struggle.
So there's this gap between I've got to take on the job so I could learn it and stumble through it, fail forward, but you would rather train first?
Yeah, well, so our philosophy now is we're going to train up and we're going to be prepared for a vehicle before it hits our door. Before it hits the bays, we're going to be fully tooled, fully trained, and have all the information systems we need in order to fix that vehicle efficiently.
And that's why shops in the area come to you. I mean, what's your percentage of shops that come to you and the customer?
So we have over 40 local garages in the state of Delaware and a little bit over the borders too, because we're such a small state, that bring us their most difficult jobs that they get in, the stuff they can't figure out, jobs that they've thrown thousands of dollars at trying to figure out. And then they bring it to us, and usually within an hour, we have a solution for them.
Now, is it because of the training, or is it because you go to the computer and do a little research?
So ironically, we're coincidentally, maybe it is, we get these phone calls from service information companies that say, hey, we've got this catalog of silver bullets that if you get stuck on a problem, you punch in your problem, and we'll give you a whole bunch of possible solutions. And I proudly tell them, I said, well, we don't need that here. And they say, well, what do you do if you get stuck on a job? And I say, well, it just doesn't happen. So, and the reason it doesn't happen is because we have a really good approach. We have the right service information, the right tooling, and the right training. When you have the tooling, training, service information, cars just get fixed.
I want to talk about OE tooling here in a little bit. But is OE tooling like the reason for your success right now?
It's a part of it for sure. When you look at the manufacturers that build the cars, nobody knows how they work better than the manufacturers.
Yeah.
So they mandate their dealerships to have specific tools. They say, in order for you to be our dealership, you have to have this tool, this tool, this tool, and this tool. In fact, it's such a serious mandate that the dealers don't have a choice. So the tool just shows up in the mail to the dealership and the dealer has to pay for it. So they don't get to choose to say, well, you know, we're going to budget out for June for this particular tool. It's just coming, and they're going to have to pay for it. It's just how it is. Well, because they have all the correct tooling, and because they go to training, the manufacturer mandates they go to training, and the manufacturer mandates that they have all the correct service information for the car, it makes the dealer groups that are under the manufacturers, it makes them more efficient on fixing those vehicles.
Yeah.
Well, you can apply that exact same philosophy in the aftermarket. It's a little harder because a lot of aftermarket shops work on more than one make. If you're smart, you start limiting how many makes you work on and you just become expert on those makes. And the factory tooling is definitely a piece of it, for sure.
Yeah, and you know members in ASA along with you that they're just specialists. And
absolutely.
Because they're specialists, first of all, do you see a trend that way? And it makes them such an expert.
Right. I think that's the reality is if you want to be an expert, you're going to have to specialize to some degree. You might not have to specialize on one brand, but you're going to have to limit the number of brands that you work on because the amount of training you need to do every year and the amount of tooling you need to invest in every year is going to be significant per make if you want to be an expert. Now, if you just want to be able to do some oil changes and some brake jobs and some tires and basic stuff like that. You don't need as much training and tooling. But if you want to fix a car 100%, you're going to need that training and tooling. And working on every make doesn't make a whole lot of fiscal sense.
You know, I've interviewed a lot of entrepreneurs, shop owners, service professionals, and there's a lot of them that are saying, kind of just like you, Pete, that they've got all of the OE equipment, and it's in the garage under lock and key because it's so valuable, but it really makes them such a generalist expert almost.
Absolutely. I think it puts us at a level beyond the dealership. Because we combine our aftermarket tools with the OE tools, which is an important point, you don't want to discount the value that the aftermarket tools bring to the game as well.
Yeah.
So when you have an independent shop that has both the factory tool and the aftermarket tool, we stand a competency level above the dealer just because we have more capability than they do.
Got it.
Which just makes the game really fun.
So you're a trainer and you're involved with the Delaware Training Group. Tell me how that started and where are you getting your education in order to be a trainer?
So Delaware Training Group was founded mainly because I didn't feel I was smart enough. So I felt that there was a whole level of how to fix cars that I didn't fully understand yet. I had been attending a couple of classes here and there, and I'd met a couple guys down in Baltimore that they had flown out from Colorado. Randy Burnclough and Jim Kemper. They're two of the smartest guys in the trade by far. And those guys basically proved to me in a 4-hour class that there was a whole nother world of training available out there. And from that point, I started saying, hey, you know what? I need to get this training because I want to be as good as I could possibly be at fixing cars.
Oh, I get it. So that you could get these good guys to come in, you needed to build a consortium of guys who wanted that training.
Right. So I started talking to other technicians in the area, in the tri-state area, and we started pooling money together and then offering trainers, hey, you know, if you come out, we pay your way, give you a fee, you know, pay your lodging, airfare, et cetera, and bring them to Delaware and on a small scale, like 30 guys in a class at a time, 25 guys mm-hmm. in a class at a time, which gives us the guys and gals that show up, gives us that individual attention to the trainer, which means we're going to learn at a more in-depth realm. The other thing that we do with Delaware Training Group is we challenge our trainers to teach at the very highest level they can instead of teaching to the lowest common denominator of the class. Our philosophy to the trainer is you're paid, you set the world on fire with us, and you teach it at the highest level you can. If somebody complains that it was above them, then that means you did your job.
Absolutely. And how humbling for an individual to say that. You know, either they're going to say that and regret that they said it, or they're going to think, I got a long way to go. I am so happy I can see the future.
Right. Well, and that's the reality of it. And we've had a couple guys that have said, hey, you know what? I didn't like that class. It was too hard or something like that. And I've had other guys that have come to me and said, you know what, Pete? That really made my head hurt, but it woke me up too. So now I know that I got a ways to go. I'm not as good as I thought I was. And now I got some work to do to work on me and make myself better.
I'll bet you there's a lot of guys that can relate to it made my head hurt. I've been in a seminar like that. Here's great news. There's a new brake pad on the market that can stop a pickup SUV or CUV up to 50 feet sooner than other leading pads. And on top of that, it lasts up to twice as long as previous designs. Sound too good to be true? Well, Wagner Brake did it. They designed their new Wagner OEX brake pads that stopped up to 50 feet sooner than other leading brake pads. To prove it, they got Link Engineering, pretty much the industry standard on brake performance testing, and they got their proof. But Wagner needed more convincing. They asked 400 top technicians to put Wagner OEX pads to the test, where it matters most, in their shops and on their customers' vehicles. 99% said they saw a noticeable difference in the new brakes, and 95% said they'd likely recommend them to other service professionals for their customers. Now, soon you can get Wagner OEX brake pads in your shop. They'll be available nationwide with coverage for 95% of U.S. pickups, SUVs, and CUVs. Get the full story. Learn about the science behind Wagner OEX and check coverage. Go to WagnerBrake.com. So, is there a survey in the United States that says that there's a stronger brain trust in Delaware than anywhere else?
You know, so ironically, we're called Delaware Training Group, but most of our members pull out of Maryland, Jersey, Pennsylvania. It's kind of a sad fact, and actually is that only a handful of Delaware shops attend the top training that we bring in. More and more are attending every time, but okay. It's tough for the Delaware guys. I think, you know, Delaware, we've got our beaches, and you know, we've got a lot of fun things to do here in Delaware. I think a lot of guys would rather just do that instead of getting smarter.
And so goes an issue, and we won't talk about that. So you're also a writer, Pete, for Auto Inc. magazine, and that's ASA's magazine. And you write a series called Show Me the Fix.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's my current series. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Tell me the idea behind that.
So we, as a fix-it shop, we get a lot of vehicles in from other garages and sometimes just from customers off the street who have been to a whole lot of other garages and they can't get their car fixed. And oftentimes they've spent thousands of dollars and they can't get through inspection or something to that effect. And this series takes one car basis at a time and goes through what was wrong with the car, what we found to make it fixed, to fix the car, and looks at the mistakes that were made previously and why those shops might have made those mistakes. The goal is to kind of highlight to other shop owners in the country that these cars are very fixable indeed. They're not that difficult to fix if you have a systematic approach, you have the right training tooling, and the right information. You see a pattern there, right?
you got to outthink this stuff?
It's not really outthink it. It's honestly, it's pretty simple, straightforward. Most of the jobs that come into us that have been bounced around a whole bunch of different places, usually the solution is incredibly simple and oftentimes not even that expensive to fix.
Follow the bouncing ball?
Usually you start off from ground zero as a blank slate. All right. And you just use your processes. Use your training and your processes and follow it through.
So do you have fun writing these articles?
I do. It's really enjoyable. It's a good shot to the ego that we get to do that, obviously. So that helps. but the articles themselves, I enjoy writing. I think I do a pretty okay job at it.
Yeah.
The folks at Auto Inc. seem very, very happy with what I do for them for the series, so it's a lot of fun.
You actually have a great writing style. I read a few because I work with ASA and their Audio Inc. program, so I get the magazine and I had a chance to read Pete, and I love the concept. Do most techs, most shop owners, want to read articles from fellow techs because that gives them one of the highest levels of learning?
Ooh, boy, that's a really good question. Oh, wow.
Because you've been there and you've done that. And it's almost, you know, my own commonsensical approach to things.
You know, Carm, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm surprised that anybody reads my stuff. I can't even begin to fathom. It's truly an honor. When I go to events and stuff like that, I have shop owners who I don't know. I have technicians that I don't know that come up to me. And they thank me. And they say, I really appreciate what you write and what you do. And I think I don't have a good concept of the impact that it has in that regard.
Yeah, you know, I've interviewed other guys that have written and do training, and they say the same thing to me. I had no idea, you know, I don't know, Scott Weaver, Gonzo, he said the same thing to me off air. He says, I just can't believe how this happens.
Right. I think it's crazy they just take my stuff every month and they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to publish this. I think it's cool.
Well, good for you.
It's an honor and it's fun.
Well, good for you. Hey, so you're an ASA member and you serve on the Mechanical Ops Committee.
Yes.
What's happening at ASA?
ASA is doing a lot of good things. We're working hard on, in Delaware, technician licensing. We're hoping to create a self-regulation type of organization here in Delaware that would allow auto technicians and shop owners to act almost like the Bar Association does for lawyers or the Medical Association does for doctors. Would allow us to self-police ourselves, basically, as a trade.
How? I mean, I'm so interested. I mean, I want to do episode after episode on this. I am so happy you brought this up. Can you give our listeners just a little bit of the thought process here?
So it starts with fundamentally as a trade, we don't have any standards. So we don't have any across-the-board standards that fit for every single shop in the whole country or the whole state or anything. Mm-hmm. So from an ASA philosophy, we want to start with one state. Delaware is a small enough state that we think it's a good starting point. It has a lot of high-quality shop owners in the state of Delaware. So we feel that the standards are already pretty good here in Delaware to implement a mandatory standard system. And by creating mandatory minimum standards, we think that the technicians are going to see a better pay, a better overall pay. We think shop owners are going to see better overall profits and income. And we think that the vehicle owners are going to see overall higher quality repair cars that cost them less overall to get them fixed because they're going to get fixed right the first time more often. So that's kind of the nutshell of it.
So here I'm thinking, without having heard that, and now I'm hearing it and I'm trying to assimilate it, and I'm thinking of ASE as far as the technology training side, the certifications there.
Yep.
How is there an interaction? Is there one hook to the other?
I think hopefully that there is. I think in a perfect world, ASE could be the minimum standard to be an auto technician and to be able to work on cars. Now, there'd be some other levels, the apprentice levels and such like that, but I think the ASE is a very good minimum standard. Say you have your ASE in that particular system on a car, you should be allowed to work on that car. It doesn't mean that you're going to be the expert or the absolute best at it, but it means you've achieved a pretty good minimum standard that's provable throughout the whole country. So it's an agreed upon minimum standard.
You know, you say self-policing. That's a mouthful.
It is, and it's scary to some degree. It's less scary than having a bunch of bureaucrats come in and police us for us, though. And the reality is at some point in time, auto repair is going to get policed. So either we're going to police ourselves, or some other bureaucrat's going to come in and go, you know what? These guys are running ragged. They don't have any standards. We're going to create standards, and we're going to shove it down their throat. I feel that by being proactive, we're going to get the best overall solution, long-term solution for everybody involved, the government, the auto repair guys, the technicians, the vehicle owners, the whole shebang can get the best overall if we can come up with a solution that allows us to police ourselves and regulate ourselves.
Canada, have you looked at what they're doing up there?
Canada has a pretty interesting program. A little different than what we have envisioned here. They have a lot more government involvement instead of just trade guy involvement. And they're also not national. So they're one area is this, one area is that. They're not uniform across the board up there.
All right.
Ideally, we'd like to see something that became uniform across the whole country.
And do you see ASA having a big role in this?
I think ASA is probably going to have the largest role of it. ASA is the largest and oldest organization of their kind. You know that.
Yeah.
And basically, ASA has been involved in every major and significant issue that's ever happened in the auto trade. And they've always been a proponent of finding internal solutions. So we want to be the guys that are fixing it. We don't want somebody external to the auto trade fixing it for us. We want to be the solution, and that way, it's not only is it good for us, but we know because ASA is ethical, it's going to be good for everybody.
Hey, when the time is right and you want to share this, let's just sit together and do an episode on where you see this heading. I mean, nothing locked down, nothing, you know, golden, no rules, just maybe have an open dialogue. I know there's 800,000 techs out there waiting to figure out how this is going to work out, because with the autonomous car, with the technology, with what's going on with the OE and data, who owns it, who doesn't, and one day you're going to plug into a USB port on a car. Who's qualified to do that? Who can take my blood? Who's qualified to take my blood? Who's qualified to keep me safe in my car?
Right. We need those standards. We really do. So as a society, we need those standards.
Yeah. Okay. So a major project you worked on with Donnie Cipher was OE Repair Info. Tell me when this started with you, and then you approached Donnie, and there's this fabulous site, OERepairInfo.com out there. Give us the story.
So back in, I think it was 2007.
Wow.
Factory scan tools were kind of an infant concept for the independent repair shop. And it was really difficult to find what tool you needed for what brand. And inside the brands, sometimes you had multiple tools.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to figure out, is this the right tool for the car that I'm working on, was very difficult in the early years of independent shops having factory scan tools. So there was no place that you could go to and just kind of do independent research on that across multiple makes. And I decided that we needed that as a trade. So I had approached IATN originally and said, hey, if I do some collection research, will you guys post it somewhere on all of your information? And they were kind of like lukewarm to it. They weren't real hot and heavy on it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I was going to do it anyways. They said I was allowed to do the research publicly on their forums, which was the other thing that I'd asked them. So I did for 7 months, 10 months, something like that. I did every week or two, I would post a post in the tool forum asking for other technicians to respond with what they knew on a particular brand of vehicles. And then I compiled all that into a spreadsheet. And after a year, I had a working spreadsheet, and I shared it with everybody that it helped, and anybody that wanted it, I gave it away to. And that was as far as I could really go with it. I didn't have the skills to take it or the funding to take it into a big website production deal. So in 2010, I got a call from Donnie Cipher, who I knew by name but not personally. And he said, hey, working with Nastiff, we're trying to do this project. I heard that you did something kind of similar a little while back. Would you be willing to work with us on it? And he said, we don't want to steal your stuff. He was real, real ethical about it. We don't want to take your research, because research is kind of, can be kind of protected.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, dude, this was never about me making money or ego. I was like, take it. Let's do this thing. Let's make it happen. Donnie put the horsepower behind the thing. And it took a couple tries. Nastiff ended up not really being the right long-term avenue for it. ASA ended up being a better avenue for it. And ASA's relationship with the OEs got the funding we needed to turn it into a full-blown website. It's available out there now, free to everybody, OERepairInfo.com.
Mm-hmm.
And when they launched that, it was like watching my kid graduate from college. Oh. Or something. It was pretty cool.
Talk about proud papa, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you guys deserve a lot of credit for that, because it's a single source to go to figure out what tools are out there.
Right. And one of the neat things about it is pretty much anything you need to know, once you get to the main page of the site, you're probably 3 or 4 clicks away from the piece of information you're looking for. So once you get to the main page, it's so easy to navigate, so easy to find what you want. Just click, 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 and you're there. So Donnie Cipher is an absolute genius on web pages.
Yeah. And thanks so much for what you guys did. And I'm sure that if every person who's listening who has benefited from this and appreciates it should just send you a buck.
Right. Yeah, there you
go. Just a buck. That's all. Being a top technician takes a lot of hard work. And you can't do it alone. I believe you would agree, vehicle technologies, repair procedures, and diagnostics are changing every year. That's where Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Guru Garage can help. The Garage Gurus program has been designed by and for technicians and offers the most comprehensive program of support tools in the industry. There's a nationwide network of Guru on-site training and technology centers where you can get hands-on training with the equipment and tools needed to solve real work-related challenges. And when you can't make it to on-site training, there's Gurus Online, a 24/7 online academy with a huge catalog of course options. Garage Gurus also helps where it matters most, on the job, in your shop. Their Gurus on the Go technology fleet, well, they bring the latest products and technology demos right to you. If you need a quick part lookup, the Gurus On Demand app gives you fast, easy, and accurate info. And when you need help with a technical issue, their bilingual ASE-certified gurus on call are ready to help. And this year, they're introducing their Garage Rewards Loyalty Program, which gets you points towards free gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Motor Parts brands. It costs nothing to join, and you could start earning points immediately. So head on over to fmgarageguru.com, learn all about the Garage Gurus program, and start earning points today. Hey, so like you don't have anything else to do, think about all the things that Pete Rudloff is doing. You're also currently working on the development of a simple apprenticeship program that any shop in America could use to help bring young talent inside the trade. Give us a glimpse of this.
So apprenticeship is a hot topic right now in the trade.
Yep.
Our trade has struggled to bring in the right kind of talent and train the right kind of talent to come in to be the next generation of auto mechanics. It's been something we've been struggling with for the past 15 to 20 years. It's not a new problem. We've really, really, as a trade, struggled to bring in new, good talent who's the ideal type of person to come in and be an auto mechanic.
Yeah.
And some of the problems that the new technicians face is the cost of tooling and the cost of education. So I've been working on and building, and I've implemented a model at my shop where the apprentice doesn't have any tooling or costs. The shop pays for all tools. The apprentice doesn't have any schooling costs. The shop pays for all training. We set up in-house training to get them to where they can learn kind of the ropes of the shop. And as they graduate through the program, we'll actually send them to technical training school. And the philosophy behind it is to get shop owners to buy into the idea that these are investments. So I think a lot of shops don't treat bringing in an apprentice as a long-term investment because they go, well, you know what? The first year I'm going to invest, you know, 25, 30 grand into this kid in salary, and he's not going to generate me any revenue. So a smart business person will realize that a kid that you paid 30 grand that first year to, just because he doesn't make you money the first year, you've still got years 2 through 10, 12, 15, 20, and that can be millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
So the goal is to get them through that first year where they're up to speed and can function in your individual shop and take care of your basic tasks so you can identify the kids that are worth investing in too.
You're talking about when people say, yeah, I want to grow my own, that's an investment.
Absolutely. And you have to treat it like an investment. And you have to treat it like a long-term investment that's not going to pay you back right away. If you hire a kid who doesn't know anything and you expect him to start making you money after 6 weeks, you're going to be disappointed, the kid's going to be disappointed, and you're going to do the trade no service. You're not doing anybody any good by doing that.
I wish I can recall who my guest was within the last 2 months. I guess I'm getting old and I'm forgetting. But that shop owner said to me, the shop of the future is going to pay for the tools for the tech.
I agree with that.
So that the specialties that the shop is known for that can do, the tools will be there for them. They'll stay off the tool truck. They'll have a whole lot less debt to pay. So their income immediately goes up, even if they don't get paid anymore.
Right. So one of the things I noticed about the typical candidate that comes into this trade, and this is good for going back 30 or 40 years, this is going to be a trait that follows almost every single auto mechanic in the trade, is we're not good decision makers with money. So we're impulsive. We like to buy stuff. We like to spend money.
Yeah.
And we get on the tool truck and we will spend. And it's not uncommon for today's technician to have $100 to $150 a week tool payment with one tool guy. And then maybe a 75 with another tool guy and a 50 with another tool guy. Next thing you know, they're $300 a week just in tools. And a lot of those tools were irrationally purchased. So they weren't tools they had to have. They were tools that thought that was really neat. And even though they're going to use it once, they bought it.
It's the coolest. I got to have it.
And look, I get it. Believe me, I'm an impulse buy guy. I love buying tools. I love buying, you know, all my gadgets and stuff
tool
like that.
Tool junkie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm the worst at it. But I figure if only one guy in the shop is doing it, and that's me, then that's overall better for everybody in the shop because my guys don't have a tool bill now. So they don't have an education bill because I'm paying that for them.
This has got to be an important trend of the future.
I think so. I think it's the key. I think it's the key to our next generation being successful.
And it's the key to a retention.
Right. Well, so there's one of the other added benefits of if you're paying for tools, your guys don't have a toolbox that they're just going to, on a whim, roll to another shop for, you know, $1 an hour difference or something like that. So they're going to stay in your shop and they're going to be loyal to you because you have all the tools.
Can you, if, Can you imagine what you can do with $300 a week tool payment?
Absolutely. And guys, a lot of guys in the trade, that's how we came up. That's how I came up, was, you know, having this ginormous tool bill. I think at one point in time, I had, you know, $25,000 on credit and tools on the tool truck.
Yeah, I know it exists. And for families to deal with that, for individuals to deal with that, for the tool guy knowing that he keeps buying and buying, and it almost sounds like a loan shark is maybe as crazy and as funny as that may sound.
Yeah, well, I mean, what the tool guy's selling is credit. You know what I mean? He's saying, hey, we got this credit. You've got $1,000 on your credit account. Would you like to get anything this week? And we all know in America how easy it is to get into credit debt.
Yeah, it sure does.
So Americans in general, we're all really bad about that.
Okay. There's got to be a different side of Pete Rudloff, a community philanthropy. What's your biggest favorite cause?
March of Dimes, okay. Without question. Without question. In 2007, my daughter Kira was born, and she was born very, very premature, 3.5 months early.
Oh, boy.
She was 1 pound, 11 ounces, and the doctors gave her a 3% chance of surviving. And when they said a 3% chance to survive and a 0% chance that she would be long-term okay. So basically, we were given kind of a bill of goods to say, hey, your kid's coming early, and it's going to be horrible. She probably is going to live, and if she does, you're probably going to be taking care of her the whole rest of your life because there's going to be stuff wrong with her. And I'm happy to say she spent only 90 days in the neonatal intensive care unit. And she came home, and she had a lot of ups and downs. It was a very trying time, the second most difficult time in my entire life. And but she came home, and she got healthy, and she's the healthiest kid in her class now. She's just graduating third grade here in another couple of weeks. She's the healthiest kid in her class, smartest kid in her class, and zero related problems to being early. And now she spends her days being a pain in my butt, which I love.
Doing what daughters do. Huh?
Yeah. Wow. So related to that, a couple months after my daughter came home from the hospital, we had gotten a call from the lady that runs the March of Dimes here in Christiana Hospital.
Okay.
And I had gotten kind of a pretty good reputation for dealing with the doctors because what we talked about earlier, I don't deal with authority, right? I'm very hard headed and very straightforward.
Yeah, you want answers now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, from my standpoint, my daughter, it's my job to make sure she got healthy and came home.
Yeah.
So I felt I was her primary caregiver. So so I wanted to be involved in every decision and every thing, and that ended up me butting heads with some of the doctors and staff at the hospital not in an angry way, but in a very, you know, measured way.
Mm-hmm.
And the result of which changed some hospital policy and changed it for the better. So Kelly Cover from March of Dimes called me a couple months after we were home and said, hey, Pete, you know, the stuff you did in the hospital, there wasn't really anybody there to help talk to you about what to expect and things of that nature. Would you be interested in coming back and talking to families and specifically dads who have children here in the NICU? And I thought it was a huge honor, number one. And so I immediately said yes. And every couple of months I go to the hospital now and I talk to them. We bring lunch and dinner or something like that in, and we have kind of like a little round table with any of the dads and moms that have kids that are currently at the NICU. And I share my daughter's story and give them a little piece of hope that things, you know, have the potential to be okay. I talk to them about advocating and not being afraid of the doctors and being willing to say, hey, I don't understand what you said. You need to put it in terms that I'll understand. I always tell people I need auto mechanic terms. I don't need doctor terms. I need auto mechanic terms.
Right, right.
And so it's been, gosh, I guess almost 9 years that I've been doing that now.
Wow.
And it's easily, aside from being a father and a husband, it's the most significant thing that I do personally.
Personally rewarding.
Yeah. Wow. I leave those sessions so drained and just so emotionally just tanked.
You go over it. Every time you speak, you relive it.
You do. I mean, I bring pictures in and I have notes, so it reopens the Band-Aid every single time. But this past year, I was at a training event here in Delaware that Delaware Training Group had put on. And one of the staff at the hotel that we were using comes walking up to me first thing in the morning, and he says, "Hey, man, I know you." And I didn't recognize the guy. And I said, "Oh, no problem. How do you know me?" And he says, "I met you at the Christiana Hospital in the NICU." I said, "Oh, wow, okay, you know, that's kind of cool. You know, how's your son or daughter doing?" And he said, "My daughter is doing fantastic, and I want you to know that your words that you gave us, that you said to us, were what got me and my wife through those hard times, and I really appreciate everything you said." And such a powerful thing to have happen. Made me very, very proud. Mm-hmm. So very, very proud.
Well, my hat's off to you. Okay, so you can't work for anybody.
Yeah.
And you've got 9 major irons in the fire. What are your long-term plans?
So when I got into this trade by accident many, many years ago, I decided that I wasn't going to be an old guy fixing cars. And I said, you know, by the time I'm 45, I'm going to retire out of the automotive trade. I'm going to find a new challenge to do. You know, I committed myself to I was going to accomplish as much as I could in those years that I was going to be in the trade. But by age 45, I decided that I want to retire and do something different. Mm-hmm. So my plan is still at 45. I plan on retiring. I don't know if I'll close the shop or if I'll empower a manager to run it for me, mm-hmm. or if I'll sell it or what I'll do yet. But at 45, I plan on retiring. That's another 4.5 years away. And I plan on retiring and trying something different. I don't know what that's going to be yet.
You're not retiring. You're just moving on.
No longer going to be a shop owner. Right.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. My intention is not to be shop owner day to day and working on cars day to day.
So you may keep your foot into it because you have somebody running your shop, or you've partnered with someone to buy you out, say, over a 5 or 10 year period.
Right.
But because look what you've invested in. Look at what's going through your brain and how smart you are with all this stuff. I know what's going to happen in 5 years. You're going to invent a whole new – because look at the stuff you're doing. You're going to invent a whole new way of supporting the industry.
I hope so. I don't plan on stopping until that point happens. And maybe I won't stop even after that point happens. I don't know yet. I haven't taken anything off the table. You know, honestly, it scares me as 45 gets closer. I'm like, you know, I decided this when I was like 20. So I decided when I was 20 that I was going to, and it seemed like 45 would never happen. So yeah, I didn't think it would ever actually hit that point.
Right. I hear
and
you.
Now, I'm approaching it and I'm going, man, you know, those words came out of my mouth. So now what am I going
to
do?
So are you that committed to a decision you made when you were 20?
Yeah, I'm one of those guys that once I decide something, I do it. I think I am that committed. I don't know though.
Okay, so it's 4.5 years. When do you really start throwing the fishing pole out and figuring out? Another year. You got to start looking or thinking.
Well, I don't know.
All right. You'll know it when it happens.
Yeah.
So everything
in my life has always just kind of been roll with the punches. You work as hard as you can.
Yeah.
You keep an eye out for the right opportunity. I imagine over the next couple of years, the right opportunity is going to present itself.
Yeah.
It could be a teaching endeavor. It could be a writing endeavor. It could be something completely out of the trade. It could be, I know the stuff I do with the March of Dimes, they've talked about scaling that up. And, you know, it could go something in that direction. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
But, I just don't know.
Yeah, you've got lots of talent. And there's no doubt that something's going to happen for you just like it happens for all good people.
Well, I believe that. Thank you.
I had a blast. You are on fire. Great guy and run a great business. Pete Rudloff from Pete's Garage in Newark, Delaware. Give us some final words to live by.
Words to live by is be accountable. So be accountable for what you do. Be prepared to do what you say you're going to do. And then do it. I think it's really that simple in life. And then make sure you give back a little too along the way.
Very powerful words. Never heard them yet on the podcast, but it makes so much sense.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks, Pete. Hey, great to have you, man.
Appreciate you having me.
Hey, aftermarketers, thanks so much for listening. Now find additional show notes and a bio on Pete Rudloff, along with links to our discussion points. It's all on the show notes page on the Remarkable Results Radio website. And that's also the place where you can subscribe to be an insider and get the pulse on every new episode release. Now, I really appreciate your engagement with the podcast and would ask that you help spread the word. Uniting our industry for continual improvements is a goal, big goal, and I'm grateful for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.